Chapter 18. Terror. Mount Vengeance. Drakkan Vangarich took his throne in the crypt Nexus. The temple operations chamber was dark. About the Grand Master were a select gathering of tacticians, sans expedients, infocytes, temple alternals, and officiologistas. But he wouldn't have known it, for all the evidence of their presence. In the blackness, the Grand Master's operational staff and advisers were just disembodied voices, echoing about the chamber.
"Initiate," Vangarich commanded.
The darkness flickered to life as the crypt Nexus became the projected site of a chamber-spanning, hololithic representation. The three-dimensional image was crisp and rich in colour and texture, but portrayed a first-person perspective.
"I can see what he is seeing," Vangarich said. "But can he hear what I am saying?"
"I am receiving you, Grandmaster,"
came the deep voice of Esad Wire, the officio operative better known to his fellows as Beast. With any good fortune, the crypt Nexus was about to witness some of Beast's talents at work, relayed directly from the holoptometric implants behind Esad Wire's cruel eyes.
"Assassin," Drakkan Vangarich told his living weapon, "you are mission affirmative. Do me proud, Beast Cruel."
Esad Wire cast his gaze at the ground. He was in a wardroom. Starched naval uniforms hung about lockers and stands, while the bodies they were supposed to adorn decorated the wardroom floor. Officers and ensigns of the 1st Royal Provost's Naval Security Battalion had lost their lives in the discovery of an onboard imposter in their wardroom. Beast Cruel had made light work of the naval security armsmen, breaking bones and backs as he swiftly dealt with his discoverers. Sealing off the bulkhead hatch, the assassin proceeded to select an armsman's uniform to cram his muscular bulk into, and completed the disguise with a ceremonial lasquibus, a monomolecular-edged sabre, and Scipio-pattern pistol. The ridiculous naval foppery of his uniform complete, Beast Cruel had crushed the bodies into a wardroom ablutory. Closing the cubicle door, he allowed the weight of the bodies against it to provide sufficient deterrent to weak-bladdered ensigns or armsmen curious of the disappearance of their comrades. By the time they were actually discovered, Cruel planned on being long gone. Pulling the strap about his chin and the visor down on his broad top cap, the assassin left the wardroom and strode out into an ante-corridor. Making his steps strident, his back straight and his boots squeak in time with a group of similarly dressed Royal Provost men, Cruel marched out onto the hangar deck of the Emperor-class battleship Autocephalax Eternal. The hangar housed lines of gleaming starfighters and battalion presentations of what Beast Cruel estimated to be 2,000 or 3,000 armsmen. Like him, they were ceremonially dressed and presenting arms in the form of honor guard lasquebuses. Many were already gathered in tight-at-ease formations before the podium and voxcasters at the end of the hangar. Many more were still marching in to take their positions. The march was long and dull as the contingent Beast had attached himself to made their way up the length of the rally gathering. Out of the hangar, the assassin could see the Byzantine insanity of ancient terror slowly turning. The Autocephalax Eternal was stationed in low orbit, flanked by her own ceremonial escort of ancient heavy frigates, hanging like ornate baubles above the hive world. As Beast Cruel drew closer to the podium, he went through the simple rituals of his deadly craft. He checked the tools of his trade. The weapons in his possession were next to useless. Both the lasquebus and the Scipio pistol were empty of power pack and ammunition. In the presence of such an important personage, the chance of an accidental weapons discharge, especially under the extra pressure of the ceremonial occasion, could not be tolerated. That had been part of the genius of it. Surrounded by thousands of armsmen, the target might well feel safe and let his guard down. Not a single ensign, officer, or member of the Royal Provosts, however, carried live ammunition. This had made the time and location of the operation tempting. The monomolecular sabre was more of a hacking and slashing weapon, a thug's blade for all its craft and finery. Nothing would give Cruel the split-second single-action kill that was required of the situation, better than his own tools. The rippling muscles of his murderer's arms and the heavy gauge plastile-infused bones of his hands. When formed into fists, the dead weight of the durable metal, propelled by his bulging arms, crashed with ease through skulls and rib cages. When ordinary men pummeled one another, the pair walked away with bruises and bloodied lips. When Beast Cruel beat a target to death, his favourite mode of execution and the reason for his brutal moniker, bone shattered, organs were torn free, and heads were knocked clean off. Coupled with an expert knowledge of physiology and multiple hand-to-hand combat proficiencies, Beast's hands had known little idleness in his early service to the Officio Assassinorum. The assassin could hear his target clearly now. He was close enough to be in range of the podium voxhalers. Many of his contingent had found their places in the neatly formed lines of armsmen before the podium, but Beast walked on up the central thoroughfare, his visor down, and both march and stance impeccable.
"And so I am delighted to order Admiral Villiers and the fighting men and women of the Autocephalex Eternal to the Glaucasian Gulf,"
Lord High Admiral Lansung boomed,
"to assume command of the Armada Segmenta gathering above Lepidus Prime at my command."
The Lord High Admiral was the very definition of an easy target. Huge in his acres of naval blue uniform, his red face told of an extended lifetime working out of luxurious cabins, enjoying fine fortified wines and the lavish offerings of a private galley. He looked like he had never drawn a pistol or hanger in his life, having the family and political connections to command without ever having to do so. His sheer bulk meant that during an attempted escape he wouldn't get far, and it wasn't as though his security detail of Lucifer Blacks, further from him than usual in the apparent safety of the naval rally, could lift him and rush him to a shuttle with any great haste. At his side was an equally feeble specimen of a man. Like Lansung, he had enjoyed all the benefits of a naval officer's existence and none of the hardships. Admiral Sheridan Villiers, His Grace the Void Baron of Cypranubrea, had a face that reminded Cruel of a horse and a laryngeal prominence in his throat the size of a small asteroid. Beast Cruel felt his pace quicken. He was closing. He was close. The smaller details of his disguise were no longer needed. He was still just an armsman finding his place at the front of the rally congregation. He could taste blood. He could feel the crack of bones. The quick march turned into a run. Lansung was still talking. He was handing over to the Autocephalax Eternal's gawkish commanding officer. Cruel dropped his lascivus and with a flick of a finger unbuckled his belt and holster. Carrying the holster, scabbard, pistol and sabre with it, the belt thunked to the deck. Beast Cruel was on the steps, his storming strides taking him up two or three at a time. Some alarm had now become evident in the audience. Still confused at the bizarre actions of one of their own, the armsmen simply stared. Villiers' brow had registered his displeasure. It was his battleship and security battalions on show after all. Lansung, however, betrayed the slowly dawning suspicion that he was in trouble. Cruel saw the High Lord's eyes widen and the arteries in his neck constrict. His security detail were finally on the move. Lucifer Blacks raced from adjoining corridors and cavities in the bay walls. They were too far away, however. Beast Cruel had his quarry, the assassin, his defenseless prey. Cruel's cap and visor fell away as he leapt from the top step up onto the podium. Villiers had made some attempt to go for his hanger, but was struggling to get it clear of its scabbard. The assassin fancied that with so little use but so much polish, the blade was stuck. Lansung backed away. There was no going for a blade for him. Horror sat simply on the Lord High Admiral's broad face. With a bound, Beast Cruel leapt from the podium at Lansung. Like a predatory feline, Cruel cleared Villiers and landed on the small island of fat flesh that was Admiral Lansung. Lansung crashed heavily to the deck. Beast Cruel was on top of him. Boots in his sides, knees in his mountainous chest. One murderous hand clutched a globed shoulder while the other retracted in a hefty fist. The assassin was spoiled for choice. Where to punch his plastile-infused knuckles? Through the admiral's triple chins and through his spine? Through his ribcage to splatter his meaty heart? No, the assassin decided. He would smash through the High Lord's fat skull and mash the ambitions of a dangerous mind into the deck. Beast Cruel suddenly saw a collection of panic-strewn words spill from Lansung's patrician lips. They were called as an order to those about him, to the closing Lucifer Blacks, to his flagstaff, to Villiers, and the officers of the Autocephalax Eternal. The assassin sensed the importance of the order and somehow found his way back to the moment.
"Fighting Protocol 13!" the Lord High Admiral screamed. "For throne's sake, firing Protocol 13!"
No more words, Beast Cruel decided. The fist came down.
"Hold!"
Drakan Vangorich called. Obedience. Cruel turned his fist aside, smashing its metallic force into the hangar deck.
"What in damnation is firing Protocol 13?
The Grand Master demanded. The hololithic representation sizzled to darkness, and from that darkness, temple emphasites, sans expedients and tacticians came forwards in deference. A wall section started to shudder to one side, revealing a small chamber in a lighter shade of twilight beyond. Esad Wire was strapped to a simulacra slab. His temple-crafted body was needled from head to toe with sensors. Lines ran into impulse links in the side of his skull and fiber threads into the flesh between his ears and eyes, interfacing with the holoptometric implants beyond. The assassin sat up, tearing the sensor needles and data lines from his body. The endocrinostic holosimulation was over. The frustration was clear on Wire's face. The predator had not taken down his prey. He had failed in some way. His temple re-education, his murderous strategic orientation, had been halted by a furious Drakan Vangorich.
"Again," Vangorich said, "what is this? Firing Protocol 13? That's new. I haven't heard of that."
"It's a proxy," an infosite volunteered. "A physio operatives aboard the battleship gave us the physical detailing. It's not a recovered piece of intelligence. It's a proxy created by the Strategium."
"A proxy for what?"
Vangorich demanded. A hooded tactician came forwards.
"The hypothetical came out of the logistery," the tactician said. She swiftly added, "Operative Wire's encounter with an inquisitorial tail at Tashkent factored in a greater range of eventualities for the logisters. Firing Protocol 13 is a proxy for a target behaviour based on logical extensions of those eventualities."
"Like?"
Vangorich said dangerously.
"The knowledge of certain officio-assassinorum installations and their locations," the tactician told him, "by involved and interconnected factions."
"Covert temple facilities?"
"Such delicate information could be traded between numerous individuals and organizations. The Holy Inquisition, the Ecclesiarchy, the Adeptus Mechanicus, the Imperial Navy."
"So firing Protocol 13 in this context could be?"
Vangorich pressed.
"The location of the Mount Vengeance Officio Assassinorum facility," the tactician told him.
"Knowledge of this facility?"
Vangorich confirmed, briefly casting his gaze at a wounded-looking Wire.
"It's on a list of 5 possibilities," the tactician said. "The target's behaviour would facilitate a stalemate scenario. The operative would be powerless to execute his mission with a target in possession of such information. If he attempted to do so, the battleship in the simulated scenario would fire its guns from orbit on this location. We have calculated, however, that the true nature of both the weapon's discharge and the temple location would remain secret. The incident would be recorded as a regrettable accident."
"Well, that's a relief," Vangorich said sardonically.
The import was lost on the tactician. The Grand Master was out of his throne and walking towards the egress archway. He stopped and turned to the gathered temple staff.
"I want this facility cleared of temple personnel, intelligence and equipment within the hour."
"Yes, Grand Master."
"Enough with simulations, Beast Cruel," Vangorich said. "With me."
Having removed the last of the impulse jacks from his head and the sensor needles from his flesh, Esad Wire followed his master out of the crypt nexus.
"What are we going to do?"
Esad Wire said.
"We're going to force the Lord High Admiral's hand," Vangorich told him. "Gathering an armada in the Glaucasian Gulf will do nothing to protect the core systems from the Xenos threat. What I wouldn't give for a stalemate scenario out there."
"Where are we going?"
Esad Wire asked.
Somewhere the Admiral's great guns can't reach us, Vangorich told his assassin.